Hey, it's Antrese, and welcome to the Savvy Painter Podcast. Before we get started, I just want to thank the Laguna College of Art and Design for inviting me down to speak to their MFA candidates. I absolutely loved peeking into their studios, seeing their work, and hearing about their thesis. I really enjoyed the conversations I had with the candidates down there. So a big thank you goes out to Avery Endow and Peter Zakowski for inviting me to speak, and to the students and staff for making me feel so very welcomed. Today, I am talking with the artist Zoe Frank. And it just so happens that Zoe is an alumni of the Laguna College of Art and Design, or LCAD, as you will hear us call it in this episode. That was absolutely a coincidence. Serendipity at its best. My friend Stephanie Scott was painting with Zoe at the JSS program in Civita, Italy this summer, and highly, highly recommended that I talk with Zoe. So thank you so much, Steph, for the recommendation. Zoe is a figurative painter from Colorado. She studied at the Juliet Aristides Atelier in Seattle and then went on to get her MFA from the Laguna College of Art and Design. As Zoe will tell you, she is in love with the figure. She shares her process and her experiments freely in this episode. I really enjoy talking with her about her current work, in which she is playing with observation, imagination, and photography. We also talk about the instability of this career choice that we've made and how that can really affect our mood. Zoe shares the tactics that she uses to deal with uncertainty, tactics that focus on reconnecting with the joy of making things and creating. So without further ado, here is Zoe Frank. Hey, Zoe, thank you so much for being on the Savvy Painter Podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Was there an artist that you really admired when you were young that sort of inspired you to be an artist yourself?
When I was younger, it was a lot of the Renaissance painters that I was really interested in. I remember when I was in like seventh grade, we studied Renaissance painting, and it was particularly Raphael, I think, who I was just fantasizing about at the time, like getting to be a little boy in his studio, like mixing up paints and stuff, because girls wouldn't have really gotten to do that. So I wanted to just be able to like go back in time and be in that period and do that kind of work. So those were the painters who really made me, you know, Raphael, Michelangelo, Da Vinci. That was what really got me inspired when I was young to want to do it.
So walk me through a little bit about your progression as an artist then, when you were interested in those paintings. When did you start studying art and feeling like, you know, or maybe like take me back to the time when you kind of decided that this was going to be your vocation, that it wasn't just a fun thing that you liked to do?
Yeah, it was at that same time that I decided that I was like, okay, this is what I'm really going to do with my life. And I don't think I had any idea what that really meant when I was 13.
No.
Practically. But when I was younger, I made stuff and did kind of creative projects all growing up. And then I started an atelier training when I was 20 and then went through and did my master's degree. And so I've been kind of pretty much straight through pursuing painting. Although I guess I went to a liberal arts college for a year and a half and then dropped out of school. So
really?
For a moment, I tried to take a little bit more of a traditional route and get the standard education.
What did you study there, just out of curiosity?
I was wanting to study painting, but have it be a major and get a bit more of a kind of well-rounded background to begin with. And, you know, I enjoyed doing other subjects in school. So I was trying to not focus too soon, but it ended up being the case that I just wanted to be painting all the time.
Dive in. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I can totally appreciate that.
It ended up being a good decision, I think.
So can you tell me a little bit about after you left college, what did you do?
Well, I moved out to Seattle, and I had a housemate of my godmother had been taking classes at Gage Academy and told me about it. So I went out there to just try taking classes full time. Mm-hmm. And I took a couple semesters of general classes and then found the atelier program with Juliet Aristides and ended up studying with her for 4 years full time. And I think that kind of connected with that little kid vision of just getting to be in a studio of an old master painter.
Yeah.
Or something. the closest modern equivalent to what I'd been fantasizing about years earlier and kind of really resonated at the time as the perfect place to be.
Wow.
So I was lucky. I felt lucky to find that. I just kind of stumbled into it and it ended up being a really wonderful place to study for a while.
So you spent 4 years there and then afterwards you went straight into the MFA program. And was that at Laguna College of Art and Design, you said?
Yeah, I took a year. I took a year off to just paint and then went back after a year and did, yeah, the 2 years of the master's program.
So those are two very different experiences, right? Because you have one that's sort of the atelier format and then a more traditional program. How did you struggle? How was that for you?
It was so helpful for me to have a lot of different feedback after studying with one person for 4 years and just focusing on the technique. To have just input from a whole bunch of different people all suggesting trying to do things the opposite way of how I was doing them.
Right. Yeah, that program, the atelier, is so structured, right?
It's so structured. And I knew that I wanted to have that basis to be able to really learn the traditional skills of how to paint. Mm-hmm. But I also knew that I didn't want to just paint like that, that I wanted to be able to be kind of engaged in more of the work that's happening today and feel like a kind of contemporary painter living in the world now and working and just be kind of freed up to try a bunch of different things. So I was going into the master's program really wanting to shake up that training that I'd gotten, and it helped do that for sure.
Was there anything about that process of coming from, you know, that very, very structured, you know, because in a, just to sort of elaborate for people who maybe don't know so much about an atelier program, you've got this extremely structured way of teaching where, I'm assuming it must have been site-sized and you're all doing exactly the same.
It wasn't site-sized, but it was very structured. We spent the first year just drawing. We worked from the live model every morning and then from casts and master copies. And still life in the afternoon. And we spent a year drawing and then a year painting in grisaille and then doing moving into like a limited two color palette and a limited palette. And then the last year doing slightly more personal work. But yeah, very, 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 very structured.
So much discipline. Like there's a part of me that thinks like, oh, that sounds in a way really wonderful because I love the foundational pieces of art. And I always find it's good to circle back, but I don't think I could do it now. You know, like I think I had a very structured program too when I was in my 20s, but yeah, that, ooh.
I think it's both. Like I loved it at the time. And I think there was part of me that just wants to keep doing that kind of work forever. Cause it's just, you can always get better at it. And there's further to go with things, but I felt like I needed to move away from it as well and really be able to explore my own kind of individual work, which I think is the tough part of doing that kind of a program. It's really easy to get locked into wanting to just paint that way and to want to just get better and better. And like, I feel like I could do a really good cast painting now, you know, after but, you know, it's at some point you have to kind of move forward, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So, sorry, I distracted you from the question that I asked you originally in that segment. But, so when you went on to, you know, when you went from that very, very structured format to, something that was a little bit more free, was there anything that, sort of surprised you about, you know, maybe about what you learned about yourself as a painter?
It was interesting. I think that when I went into the program, I was expecting to think about what I was painting more and be much more focused on the subject matter. And it ended up being the case that I focused more on changing my process and being more engaged with just painting in different ways. So that kind of surprised me, I guess. I kind of actually moved away from the subject matter while I was in grad school and was kind of trying to paint very basic things, you know, kind of, you know, really mundane scenes or just piles of things, but figure out how to paint them in a way that felt much more genuine to my own kind of perceptual experience and my own way of working that felt more natural. Mm-hmm. So rather than doing that kind of strict progression that I'd learned of doing a drawing and a color study and then transferring it and doing an underpainting and an overpainting and building up a painting in that very traditional way, I was just putting a couple canvases together and just working and then mounting them onto a bigger board if I needed the composition to stretch out more and or cutting things down and just finding the images as I was going and kind of working everything out, working out the drawing and the composition and the color and everything on the surface
at the
kind of all at once.
Yeah.
And that felt really good to be doing. after the other way of working. And I think now I'm trying to bring some of it together a little bit more. But I guess that was a surprise to me, as I thought that I would be more focused on kind of
that you would build on the way that you were doing things before.
Yeah, but then just focus more on like the conceptual idea of like what I'm painting and the subject or something, and that ended up not feeling as important to me at the time, I guess.
Yeah. So that must have been really fun. Just it sounds like you spent a lot of time playing in a way using simple motifs to be able to explore the painting process outside of that kind of very linear method of working.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. So once you left, where did you, what did you do after you left? Were you just kind of like from, you know, so you just finished like 4 years of a very intense atelier. And then I know as we talked a little bit about this very briefly before we started the interview, but I was just at LCAD yesterday. So I've seen the I've seen the studios and how they work.
Right.
So you went from this very structured undergrad experience to a different, very different experience at LCAD, and then you're let loose into the world.
Yeah.
Hi, Zoe B3. What'd you do?
I was able to just be painting full time. I've been really lucky that while I was in the program at LCAD, I started being able to sell a lot of my work. And so I've been making enough for the last, I guess this is the fifth year that I've been able to be just completely supporting myself and my work. Mm-hmm. So I've been painting full time for the last 2 years. And then I guess now it's, 2 years plus. And that's been going really, it's been really nice to have that time, but also a little bit scary to just be completely in isolation after getting so much feedback for so long. So yeah. I think that I was kind of going along well, and I think maybe right now I'm hitting a little bit more of a crisis point where I'm kind of wondering, wait, what am I doing here? Why am I doing this? I think it's I've like achieved really early what my kind of dream goal was, and I was kind of shocked that I'm actually been able to paint full time, which is what I always wanted to be able to do. And then I'm realizing that it's actually really isolating and lonely to be just painting completely full time and not have any kind of human interaction built into my schedule.
Interesting.
So I've just started teaching just one class a week to try and interact with humans more, which is good. And yeah, doing a reading group about art and trying to figure out ways to feel more integrated into the kind of community of other people who are working.
Yeah.
Very strange thing to be doing, to be just going to the studio every day and painting by myself. And it doesn't feel like the world is paying that much attention to painting. And it just feels very odd to be pursuing this thing. So I think I've just been kind of going and been getting this education and then been working. And then all of a sudden I'm finding myself here doing the work and kind of, I don't know.
Everything I always wanted, but wait, is this actually how it is?
Yeah, exactly. Is this what I was picturing?
I know that feeling.
Yeah. So it's been interesting.
So, so those are some really great tactics though, to sort of create, like, I love the reading group. That sounds wonderful. And then painting and interacting with other students. It's funny because, I talked about that last night, or we talked about it yesterday, or excuse me, it was Monday. It's just really interesting because you think about, especially in a school environment, you are completely surrounded by other artists who are there working. Mm-hmm. And you can just pop in, you know, it's 20 seconds to pop into somebody else's studio and see what's going on. And you can get that like in a, you know, like there's places, you know, artist communities where you have like a bunch of artist lofts that are all together. But I don't think, and I never realized this at all until I was long out of college, but you know how amazing that is to have all of that right there at your fingertips.
It was so wonderful. I really liked being in school. just having that community of people is really amazing. It makes you not feel crazy to be doing this. It makes it feel like, oh, everybody's like cares about this as much as I do. And this really makes sense. And we're working together and figuring out what we're doing.
Yeah.
And now I'm just working and it's quite different.
Yeah.
And I think it's better now. I stayed out in California for another 2 years. I was living in San Jose, which is not a big artist community. Being in the middle of Silicon Valley, there's some very neat people there, but they're not painters. So I just moved back to Colorado, and there's actually a better community here so far of folks that I've connected with. And it's just been feeling much, much more kind of supportive to have that. And I've been considering other places that I could move that would have even more painters. I'm not sure. There are nice ways, you know, you can kind of connect with the people who are coming through or connect online with people, but it's really different than being 20 seconds away from somebody else's studio.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a huge, huge difference. Very true. So can you talk a little bit about your work and what you're working on? Like, what are you currently obsessed with?
I'm working on a number of different things, but I'm really interested in these larger kind of multiple figure compositions right now. I think that's what I'm the most excited about, is putting figures together in space together. Just kind of the arrangements of how to fit those figures onto a canvas and have that kind of imply some narrative or have kind of an emotional resonance to the image.
I wouldn't really describe your work as narrative. Would you? Am I missing?
Some of it is, I think. I'm not wanting to have a necessarily a clear narrative. But I think that people can read in some stories into the scenes that they're seeing.
Yeah.
And so I'm wanting to leave it kind of open where people can get into it in different ways.
What is it about these figures that really attracts you? Is it the, I'm not going to lead you into an answer. You tell me, Zoe.
Maybe I'm not entirely sure. I think that's the work that I've always loved, been the most interested in. The stuff that made me really want to be a painter was those big, grand, multiple figure compositions. They're just so impressive. And I think I wanted to like challenge myself to see if I could do that. Some of it's just the formal aspects of it that I loved all those paintings, not because of whatever biblical story it happened to be, but because of how it's painted, how the figures are arranged in the space and how the light is illuminating it, how the scene is created. So I think that it's trying to figure out how to put all of that together. And that's really intriguing to me right now.
Yeah.
It feels like the kind of most complex and difficult challenge to bring all of that and have it all working.
Yeah.
And I really love painting the figure in particular. Doing the atelier training, we spent a lot of time with the figure, and I just kind of connecting to that. There's something about humans that's very engaging, I think. There's like nothing that's more exciting to me than that. So figuring out how to bring those together into these more complex arrangements rather than just having a portrait or a single figure has been really interesting.
And can you tell me a little bit about your process, how you're doing these? Are you pulling models into your studio, or how do you work?
It varies a lot right now. Some of them, I just started a new one, which has four figures around this kind of dinner table in this very awkward dinner party that's going on.
That sounds like a good title, the awkward dinner party.
That's the working title in my mind. This one actually just started from imagination. I did like a small gouache study while I was away in Italy, kind of figuring out the positions of the figures and the color relationships that I was wanting, and then kind of scaled that up to a large canvas from imagination, and then brought in some friends to model for the actual figures to get a little bit more specificity and accuracy with the figures in there. And then I have a table in my studio that I'm going to set up with a still life and kind of bring in. I took some photos of the friends, so I'm kind of working from starting from imagination and then using some photos and then working from observation with the still life aspects of it and the table and the chairs and kind of trying to piece this whole thing together.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting, like,
which I haven't done before.
So yeah.
Some of the other ones I've worked from photos and from just drawing images from online, like doing Google searches for, I did this very large parade painting, which was all taken from images of just searching for different parades and then, and other costumes and people and putting them together into this kind of collaged sized world that I created, which was an interesting process as well. So I think I'm wanting to feel really free to use whatever is available and to try different techniques to figure out how to make these things work better. It feels like each time I do one, there's different problems that arise from how I've gone about it. And then I keep trying to correct those problems in the next painting. So like with the last one, I felt like the photos that I'd used, I ended up feeling kind of locked into those positions that people were in. And I built the composition from that found imagery, and I felt a little bit frustrated with the limitations of that. So this one, starting from imagination, I was able to be really conscious of how those figures were fitting into the canvas and in relationship to each other and be very completely deliberate and make all of those choices myself and then bring in people. So, and we'll see what problems arise from that.
So far you're at the, so I'm curious about that. About this, I haven't seen
all the limitations yet. There's still hope. I know. The best painting I've ever made.
I don't know if it's hard to talk about this like while you're still working on it, but that's so fascinating to me that you're working from imagination photos and you know, observation of the still life. But then are you also bringing in your friends to sit and paint, or did you just do a photo shoot that you're going to use for that? Use the photos. Later. Do you know what I mean? Are you kind of going back and forth between photos and...
I think I'm going to just use the photos for them, but I'm not sure. And I'm using myself as a model for one of the figures just because it's convenient. Easy. And yeah. I have a mirror set up for that one. And I also took some photos. So I'm going with that.
Oh my God, you're throwing everything in there, Zoe. That's crazy. I love it.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy.
So when you're doing that, I'm so compartmentalized. So I'm really fascinated by how you're doing this. And I know you're in the middle of it, so you may not be able to answer all these questions I'm going to throw out at you. And that's okay, because not knowing the answer is a perfectly acceptable answer. But just coming from somebody who I seriously tend to compartmentalize all those things. So it's almost like if I were eating something, I would eat all of my vegetables and then I would eat all of that. And I would just go through and do one by one by one by one. So when you're going through this, what are you feeling like when you switch, you know, are you noticing like different states of mind as you switch from your imagination, for example, to the photograph to the observation?
Well, I think the last two paintings I did that were large figure ones were all from photographs. And I felt like, I don't know, when I'm working from life, which is what I've been trained to do and mainly done and love doing, I have this kind of natural way where the relevant information is kind of pulled out from what I'm seeing. And the photograph I've been tending, it just kind of, my tendency would be to like flatten everything. And I was kind of going in and painting up each part to a very equal level, like getting all kind of painting all, you know, there, I had this scene with 20 faces and every face is like fully painted.
Right.
And I realized, wait, that I don't need to do that. And when I'm working from life, I kind of more naturally pull out parts and let other parts kind of sit back into the space. Uh-huh. So I was hoping that by having at least some aspects of it be from observation, by having the still life, that I'll kind of be naturally pulling that forward and kind of get my brain functioning in that same way as working from observation and kind of hopefully have that kind of carrying through more of the painting. So it didn't feel so like such a separate way of working. But it is, yeah, I get so locked into the photos. Like getting these figures, doing them from imagination, it is a very different way of working. And
yeah.
My tendency is that now that I had built up the figures to a certain level from my head, and then when I got people in there and it wasn't like their bodies weren't quite able to do the pose that I was picturing, you know,
yeah.
It wasn't quite the same. But then what I ended up doing once I had some images was kind of going exactly into what those were, and losing some of what, I mean, I still have the basic positions of the figures are there where I'd placed them, but it's so easy to get locked right into the photograph. So I'm
to be start being super literal about what you're
exactly,
saying.
Exactly. And that's what's really challenging me right now is how to make use of the photographs without being so literal with them. I feel like I from starting from imagination and some observation, I did kind of establish the palette and the overall value structure of the painting much more. And I've been holding on to that. I have been holding on to the value structure that I'd established, but in terms of how the arm is positioned, that's now exactly how it was in the photo. And I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Right. It's crazy because it's cool. it's crazy. Not like you're insane, but in a really cool way to think about solving those problems and throwing sort of preventing yourself from locking in. I mean, even though I think it's so common and so it's, photos are just too hard to, in some ways to work from because everything is, you know, the camera's a machine. So it's treating everything with equal importance. So there's a tendency to not notice that you are also treating everything with equal importance.
Yeah.
But I love how, you know, that bouncing back and forth between the imagination and the literal. So I'm so curious to see how this turns out and where you take it. It sounds so, seriously, it sounds so cool.
Yeah. I mean, every painting that I'm starting or I'm like just getting into feels like it's like, you know, I'm like so excited about it and it feels like it has the most potential of everything I've done. So I'm still at that stage with this one. We haven't passed over into the point where I start seeing its real limitations and the kind of coming up against the problems that are not, that are insurmountable for this one.
Right. So, but do you find that you're then taking those problems into like those questions that you weren't able to answer into the next?
Exactly.
Painting?
That's what's propelling me to continue working and move from one project to another is answering those questions.
So cool.
Yeah.
I was sitting there. I had dinner with a couple of the students and Peter from LCAD, and it was funny because we went out to dinner. The day that I was there was the night of the first debates for this election. And I was kind of like, I am so glad I'm here with you guys and nowhere near a television. Like, this is just the best gift in the world. And it's just so great to be able to like sit there and just talk about art like this and like those problems that you're having questions that you're asking yourself about your painting and stuff. It's just like the funnest thing in the world to talk about. So.
Yeah. Well, I told you I'm painting one class a week and that's Monday nights. And I was also like, it's okay, but I don't have to sit through that.
I love this.
These are much better problems to deal with.
Much more real. I think, I don't know.
Yeah,
I didn't mean to get into that, but I'm just meant like that to be able to like sit there and think about these problems, like these questions, structural questions, color questions, how to arrange things and how to go back and forth between memory and observation and then incorporating whatever it is that you want to use to bring into your painting is probably why, you know, it is good to be around other artists because nobody else could possibly understand how fascinating that is.
That's very true.
That's why we need each other.
Exactly. These are not the normal conversations that you have with other folks.
Can you tell me, I'm just curious, have you had any really memorable responses to your work where, you know, something that you didn't maybe, because you create a work and you're having all these questions and, you know, that you're trying to solve within a painting and then you kind of let this canvas fly off into the world, right? And then it's no longer your painting. It becomes about the relationship between the viewer and the image. Have you ever had any responses to a painting that really surprised you?
I don't know if I have exactly, if there's been anything really specific. I feel like people have asked me questions about what I'm doing and what I had in mind with it, and I feel often kind of hesitant to go into too much detail about that because it feels kind of like there's a personal meaning that has made me want to make the painting, but I doesn't really matter if other people are getting that out of it. It can be kind of getting their own interpretation. But maybe I haven't solicited enough to other people's interpretations. Because I mean, I guess people have said, have given impressions of things, but there hasn't been anything too notable, I think. And then there's the weird, like, social media response of just kind of seeing how many people like specific paintings over other paintings, which is just kind of unsettling, and I'm not sure what to make of.
Yeah, that's always really that's an interesting conversation, I think, how social media plays into it. And I think it can be so sort of anonymous, like it's really easy just to like see something at a quick glance and go cool and like that and just move on. So I'm always reluctant, like I feel like with it's really cool in some ways in the moment to get this immediate feedback, I think. And it does, and it can really, I mean, it can be really helpful because sometimes you do really need a boost to your ego in some ways of like, okay, that's a really good one. Or just like, okay, I'm on the right track at least. Maybe not as a method to evaluate your paintings, but at the same time, yeah, I see sometimes it feels like the goal is to get as many reactions as possible, which doesn't seem to do anything substantial. You
That's
know what I mean?
definitely the case, I think. And I think it tends to favor kind of more easily digestible images, like that are very kind of simple or quickly done, like kind of those things that look slick and cool. So I feel like sometimes like I'll do a little head study or something, and that will get more response than these large figurative paintings that I've been spending months on, and just kind of, oh, that's curious. So yeah, I try not to take that seriously at all, but I think I do like getting the ego boost, as you were saying, like, oh, okay, people do care or something.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. I mean, I don't want to just completely dismiss it, I guess, the way that I'm feeling, because there's so many good things that you can use social media for, and how all that. I guess it's really good for sort of maintaining your presence in a way, like because you never know who's watching you, and I've always been very surprised sometimes when I think that maybe not that nobody's watching, but that like it's not that relevant, and then all of a sudden I'll get a private message, and I'm like, wow, okay, I
Yeah,
didn't
no,
expect that.
it's nice, and I think it is nice to feel like, oh, to see that other people are doing what we're doing, that just getting these little glimpses into other people's studios and into their process and the work that they're doing. It's nice to feel like you're a part of that.
Yeah, so it's the online community aspect of it. And I love that my Facebook newsfeed, for example, seems to be about 75% art. And I
Mine's
love
95%.
that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which makes it interesting to look at. But I guess I feel like the drawback to it is when the getting those likes becomes sort of an obsession.
Yeah, that's not good. And that happens. I think it does.
It's easy to slip into that, I would imagine. Can you talk about, have you had some sort of a setback where things didn't really go the way you wanted them to, or just completely the opposite of how you'd hoped them to, and more importantly, what you took away from that experience?
I'm not sure if there's been a significant setback like that in with my work, but I think I mean just in the last few and just in the last couple months, I think I've been feeling a little bit kind of unsettled. I think my somewhat from my personal life, moving back to Colorado, and I had a show that just opened and had the same show 2 years ago, and it had started off really strong, and I kind of had this expectation of how it was going to go. And the beginning of the show, it's actually now it's basically caught up and it's doing just as well. But I came back from the opening weekend and felt just like just kind of collapsing and feeling like, oh my gosh,
this
like
is
I
going to be
weekend.
terrible.
The first weekend I like had barely broken even and just felt kind of like, oh my gosh, yeah, what am I doing with this? And I guess I've been, now things have picked up and maybe that's why I'm feeling a little bit better, but it's hard to be so reliant on that. And I think I've just been feeling the instability of this career choice and the, you know, kind of ups and downs of it. And that I feel like I don't have enough data points with just 5 years of working to know how things are going to go and know if this is, you know, if these trends are going up or down or what's happening.
Right.
It feels like not enough information. And I'm kind of wanting stability so badly, or kind of certainty.
You want that crystal ball that you can look in and see like how things are going to be in 10 to 20 years and be like, all right, I'm on the right track. This is good.
Exactly. Yeah. And it feels kind of so uncertain about what the next steps are to keep moving my career forward. Where I, you know, it feels like we're all kind of fumbling in the dark a bit and trying out different things and seeing what works and what doesn't work. But there isn't one kind of clear laid out path to get where I want to be. So it just, I think that just feeling that kind of uncertainty and instability has been challenging. And I think, I've been just kind of reconnecting lately to just loving making things. And because I think I was also wanting to have, so much wanting notoriety or to be like those Renaissance painters who made me want to paint. It was like they were rock stars at the time, and painters aren't rock stars now, you know. It's a much quieter.
Yeah, we've been replaced. Like painters were rock stars, and we were replaced by rock stars.
Yeah, exactly. Just connecting with just loving making things that I've done since I was little. And I just started this knitting project with this very complicated pattern. It's just so satisfying. And it's like, this is why I like painting, is because I like making these things. And I also did ceramics and, you know, just throwing pots and making bowls and cups and stuff. It's just, I love all of that stuff. So I guess what I'm trying to answer is that I've been just thinking in the last couple of weeks about just the love of actually just doing, making these objects and spending the time doing these things. And that's how I played growing up. And I'm still getting to play in the studio every day. And so to not be quite so focused on all those exterior feedback and focus more on my own process with
it.
But
it's tough. I think, I think that's an excellent way of dealing with it, is to sort of go back to, like, I call it your why, you know, like, why are you painting? I don't know, when I get really frustrated with a particular painting, then, you know, going back to the why did I choose to paint that particular motif will help me pull out of that. So it sounds like what you're doing is a different level, going back to the why do you paint, and, you know, like when you get too influenced by these outside stimuli, going back to why you paint in the first place, I think is a really grounding and smart way to kind of pull yourself out of that.
Yeah, I think that's been helpful. I think every opening I have, I've gotten like, I have a little crash afterwards, I think. And I've talked to some other painters who've had that similar experience of, you work so hard on all of, like, it was basically 2 years of work with some paintings that had sold privately in the meantime, but 2 years of work and then like bringing it all together over the last few months and framing and shipping everything and then going out for the opening. And then the next day it's kind of like, it's over. Like that was it.
Yeah.
And then I just talked to like hundreds of people in one night. And then like the next day I'm kind of like, okay, now like no one's talking to me anymore. And like, what? I think I'm just like, it like leaves me in this very vulnerable, strange place. And so just again, we're trying to remember that like I'm doing the work for its own sake, not for the show. Like the show is just part of the process of having a career and doing the work. But the point is the paintings.
Yeah.
Rather than the other way around, to not be painting for a show, but to make the painting and then just have shows as part of the process. But I'm trying to, maybe I'm getting used to that crash that I'm experiencing, or maybe that will happen less in the future. But so far, every show, it's just the next few days afterwards are kind of a rough time.
I think that's completely normal, though. I mean, and even if you think about it and you take it outside of painting, for example, you know, I found that, okay, just getting through a degree program, you know, you work so hard to, number one, get in, number two, get through it, and, you know, all that stuff. Right. And then you have your, you know, whatever, your graduation ceremony, and you get your piece of paper, and then the next day it's kind of like this like build up, and as you get closer and closer to that final point, you're working harder and harder and harder and pushing harder and harder and harder. Yeah. And so I think your brain sort of needs like a moment to catch up with the fact that it doesn't have to freak out about every like the thousand things that you're supposed to do before in the next hour. You know? And so your brain's still on that, like your brain's still going like 1,000 miles an hour, and it's kind of like, right, where do I go?
Suddenly you're not moving anymore, and it just kind of is just whirring around in circles. Yeah.
I mean, in that regard, it makes sense. And I know from talking to, you know, as many artists as I have so far for this podcast, that is totally normal. Just so you know.
So it's not gonna get better, is that what you're saying?
you'll probably get used to it, so it won't feel as dramatic, but I think that
sort of happened this time, where it was like, oh wait, this has happened like the last three times, this is just part of the process, I guess. Yeah, okay.
Okay, got that, right.
I don't need to panic as well as feeling really depressed. I can just, you know, feel sad for a couple of days and then move on.
Hey, you know, you go for a walk or whatever and just know that there's nothing wrong with you. You're not weird. At least for that. You might be weird in other ways, but not that one.
It's true. Yeah.
Do you have kind of a dream project? I'm curious, if you had no restrictions on time or money, what would you create?
I would love to keep doing these larger multiple figure compositions, but even like on a larger scale, and have a space where I could either, you know, show a really big series of them, or like those giant Renaissance frescoes and churches, like, you know, I would love to do like
your own Sistine Chapel.
maybe not quite that large, actually. Or on the ceiling. Maybe I would do more of a, you know, the front of the church, the little, you know, enclosed area. But I would love to just, I think I've been working on this series of larger paintings, and I feel like I'm getting to do what I want to do, but I've also been working on some smaller and mid-sized paintings along with them. And I've kind of been selling them directly to people, or showing a few of them in one show, and they're kind of in a gallery that doesn't have quite enough space to really kind of get back and
to get that
all together. Mm-hmm. So it would, I don't know, it'd be really fun to have.
Yeah, it sounds like it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And that would take a long time. So I would,
yeah. Yeah. So you've got no time limits. You've got as much
time
as you
need. Yeah, to be able to just like dive in and just work on that would be really fun.
So I'm curious then, when you work large now, what is large right now to you? Nope. And going really big, what's really big to you?
The largest one was the parade painting I did, which was 10.5 by 6.5 feet. Mm-hmm. So that felt very large. I don't feel like I would need to be bigger than that necessarily, but I'd like to have, you know, a whole series of maybe, you know, around 6 by 8 foot canvases or something that just feel really, really solid.
Nice.
Yeah. I like that. I feel like just so embodied when I'm working that scale, and just feel like I can just be relating on kind of this one-on-one relationship with the figures. And so, especially with the figurative work, to be able to have them be life-size and engage with it that way feels so different than, you know, having a tiny figures on a little canvas.
Yeah. I'm curious, given that that's the type of work that, you know, the Renaissance figurative work really inspired you. When you went to Italy, was there anything that you saw there that you were just like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here?
That's always the case when I'm for sure. Yeah, I'd been I was in Rome a number of years ago before, and that time I had gone to all the Caravaggio churches, and he's just one of my favorites. So that's, and I didn't see as many on this trip, but a couple. I went to the Vatican again, and so seeing Caravaggio always does that for me. But this year, doing the Piero Trail, definitely had that experience. The Legend of the True Cross was just incredible to see that painting. That's the kind of scale I would love to to work that scale. They're just so, oh my God, it's so beautiful, so beautifully done. So that was really impactful. And also going down, the whole... Yeah.
Everything, I know.
All of it. It was fun going to the, we went to Naples and I knew that the archaeological museum was going to be incredible, and seeing those frescoes was just, the kind of early frescoes from Pompeii was just, seeing that early painting was amazing. And I kind of knew that that was going to be amazing, but then also I went over to the, was it Capodimonte Museum, the other one, and I had no idea what was there, and I didn't expect that much, and there were no guards, and it was just like really hot, like no air control or anything, and then there's just like you're, so I'm just kind of wandering through, and it's like, oh, they have they have you know, this whole bunch of Titians and another Caravaggio and The Blind Leading the Blind by Bruegel. It's just like, what is that doing here? So I think that experience of just like wandering through and just coming across things is just so fun.
Yeah,
I feel like I've been slowly making my way through Europe, trying to see a lot of the major museums. But it just feels like every city has a museum that has a couple paintings that are just incredible.
Yeah, yeah. So, if you could own a piece of art by any living artist, what would it be, or whose? That's my evil question that I
know
ask.
That really is mean. An evil question. It's so mean. Oh gosh. There's definitely a lot. I think I would take an Antonio Lopez Garcia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like a big cityscape. That would be nice.
God, yeah.
I'd be all right with that. I feel like it's something, the one of the, what is it, that dining room table with the girl and there's the food. I should have, I haven't looked at that in a while. But,
I'll look it up. I'm not.
But just, I mean, just so beautiful. And then also just this kind of reminder about, like, I don't know, observation and working through things kind of over a period of time, kind of really working things up. Until they're right. I don't know.
You mentioned that you are, that you do a, can I call it a book club? It's like readings with, it's not, a book club doesn't sound right for the way you described it. I don't think I like the way that sounds, but.
It sounds a little more, yeah.
But you get to together and do artist readings.
Jordan Wolfson has a studio right by mine, which I feel so lucky about. He's really wonderful to have nearby, and he's running this. It's actually a class, but he's letting me just participate in it. So we're doing The Shock of the New by Robert Hughes right now, and just having this kind of long, ongoing discussion. We're still on, I think we're four sessions in, and we're still on the first chapter. So really talking through.
How cool, though.
Yeah, but getting to, you know, look at modernism again, and we were just talking about Cézanne last week, and it's wonderful to get to do that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so that's what I was kind of curious about. So, the Robert Hughes book, and what, have you been in it long enough where you've gone through other books? I'm curious what, nope.
Nope. You can see me. Darn, I'm nodding, shaking my head. We just moved. I just moved back to the area. So that's
very recent.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been here. Well, I guess I've been back like 5 months.
Okay.
So yeah, just started with this group, but it's been really nice.
So I'm going to ask you this because I was just over at LCAD talking to all these students who are pushing their way through the MFA program. And I'm curious what advice you would give to an artist that's, say, you know, like 5 years behind you. So just at that moment, right?
Oh, like just starting the,
yeah.
I don't know. I think the way that I approached going through school was just to try and like really do as well as I could with incorporating all the feedback I was getting at the time and trying to just really get as much as I could out of every person I was working with. And just diving in and not fighting the way that they were talking about things. And so in the back of my mind, I'd be holding on to like, I'm not sure if I quite agree with this or maybe this isn't how I would want to do it, but then just trying to kind of keep that in the back of my mind and then just dive in and do it as completely as I could. And then kind of come back afterwards and reassess those things and figure out what I actually wanted to take from it and what actually was, kind of the more important parts to me. But trying to not hold back from each kind of person that I worked with, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So really not, judging anything that's happening and trying to, which is so hard to try to sort of erase your preconceived notions of what you learned before or how you think things should be or whatever, and just go 100% into what that one person is telling you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way that I've approached it. And I don't know.
Yeah. No, it works. I'm with you on that one. I don't want to say, I'm like, that's how you do it.
I've seen some other people go through programs and be much more, kind of already set in what they want to do. And, I feel like they haven't gotten quite as much out of the experience. Mm. So yeah, that'd be a piece of advice, I guess.
I think it's a good one. I think I kind of felt that way when I went on the JSS program that we were kind of alluding to, was just trying to take the entire experience as, which would be awesome if I could manage to live my whole life this way of, you know, this is unique. It will never happen again. So suck milk it for all it's worth, you know, get everything that you can out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be great if I could do that every day, but I don't, unfortunately.
Yeah, I wish I could live that way all the time too. I don't know why that happens when I'm,
Yeah, I guess somehow it's a stubbornness or a choice that, you know, at least for me, it's a stubbornness or a choice that I make, but yeah, I think that'd be great. So I'll give you the last question. Can you describe a single habit that you strongly believe contributes to your success or your growth as an artist?
I'm a little bit like neurotically rigid about my schedule.
Ooh, I like this.
I don't know, which I
Tell
feel
me
like
more.
For me has been really helpful. Like I work at least from like 9 to 6 Monday through Friday, and there's extra hours here and there, but just keeping those hours as those basic working hours as just sacred time where nothing else is allowed to happen. Just I feel like has been really helpful for me in keeping me just putting in the time every day and working and making progress.
I know I said that was my last question, but you see, I'm biting my tongue right now. I'm literally like biting my lip going, what? Thank you so much, Zoe. No, I'm not. tell me about, what is your normal day in the studio like then? Do you have specific habit or rituals that you go through? Are there things that you like, you know, like when I walk in, I have to tie, even if I've already done it, I have to clean things up. It just settles me and it gets me into it. And then, you know, I might decide if I'm going to listen to something and I get all that organized. You know, like there's certain things that I'm just like, I do this. And I'm curious if you have anything like that.
Oh, that's true. I think, yeah, I used to be frustrated at how that it took me some time to like, I feel like I was wasting time at the beginning and the end of the day also, like kind of futzing to get started. And then with my cleaning up process, like I felt like I could just wash my brushes out and go, but I ended up like looking at what I was doing and kind of walking around. And then I started to kind of embrace the fact that, oh, I need to kind of reconsider what I've done at the end of the day and look at it and just take this time to kind of, you know, close up the end of the day and also start, you know, with starting the beginning of the day. I guess I go in and I make tea and I listen to a lot of podcasts uh-huh. while I'm painting. I don't actually listen. I've listened to a number of the interviews on this podcast that I was really excited to hear.
Oh, that's it. I am not airing this. You're done. This is over. I liked you up until now, Zoe, but that's it.
It's actually really funny because I do listen to podcasts all the time, but I can't listen to ones about painting. It like totally stresses me out. So there's a number of podcasts that look great and they're about painting and I can't listen to them because it feels like, I don't know, like it feels like all the things that other people are talking about sound like such good ideas. And it feels like things that I should be incorporating to my work or things that I should be doing for my career. And I just get like, instead of it being kind of sitting in the background, it just like takes over.
Yeah. It's like,
I really enjoy listening to podcasts about other creative interviews about, you know, writers and screenwriters and, you know, other people who are in creative fields or listening to politics. And it just sort of,
yeah,
it seems to kind of occupy that chatty part of my brain. So I will listen to stuff. But yeah, other than that, I'm just kind of, I often do some office hours in the morning before I go to the studio. If there's emails and things that I need to take care of, I'll do that in the morning before I leave. And then when I'm at the studio, I try not to, I don't have internet at my studio. So mm-hmm. I try to, although I guess I do listen on my phone so I can check in with things, but I try not to deal with too much of the kind of work related things there and just, listen to stuff and paint.
I know. And it sounds like, I know it sounds like, you know, so what do you do in the morning? You brush your teeth and then what? But, but I think it's really, you know, like it's really interesting because I think there are things that we, you know, that each of us sort of does automatically that just seems like a no-brainer. That, you know, it's part of our routine, which sort of by just that implies that you do it without thinking about it and it's a habit. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, I think it's really interesting to hear what other artists do in the morning because sometimes I'm like, oh, that, okay, yeah. Because I can totally, I mean, I understand what you're saying about, I gave you a really, really hard time about not listening to my podcast while you paint, but like, I don't even.
I have listened to like half a dozen of them.
It's okay.
And I feel bad, like, I feel like I could be getting so much useful stuff. It's just, it's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah, don't even worry about it. I'm giving you a hard time. a lot of times I find like that I need to listen to something like classical music or something without words in it, basically. Mm-hmm. And something that is long and repetitive. So I'm unaware of time. Mm-hmm. I can't, you know, it depends on if I'm doing lay-ins and stuff, I can listen to, you know, anything like rock music or whatever, you know, like the traditional 3-minute song, but uh-huh. I know it's 3 minutes, right? And uh-huh. So if I'm really focused on something, those three, like, I feel like I have a clock ticking in my ear.
Every 3 minutes is going off. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
So just, I don't know. So I've got my own quirks and very bizarre habits and things like that.
That makes sense. I think I'm actually, when I'm starting something or like setting up a painting or starting, I'll often have it quiet. But then when I'm kind of more in the middle of it, I'll have the stuff, the talking things.
Yeah.
And it's great if I can like save up, find a whole bunch of podcasts that I can just binge where I haven't listened to any of them. And then it just sort of listening to the same people for like 8 hours in a row, just doing one interview after another. And it's sort of in the background where I think I get a little bit distracted if I'm going from one to another.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of them are an hour long, which is good if they're much better than those like 20-minute segments. I want people to just keep talking.
I know. I do that binging. My binge thing that I will purposely not listen to it for a very, very long time and just let this like big queue of them lead up is
that's the best.
Radio Lab. I love that show. I paint to that all the time. It's so weird because it is so different from what I'm doing. That's really
cool. Yeah, so, I think hearing about other things is helpful.
Cool. And I'm curious too, because, you know, I was having this conversation. I did this mini class with, and we talked a lot about the habits of artists in our own studio practice and stuff. And one of the things that kind of came up is, you know, that some of the artists that were in that class didn't really think that looking at reference or looking at other artists counted, you know, like when you're, it's kind of hard to describe right now without recounting the entire conversation. But basically, you know, sometimes you just need that quiet space to flip through other art books and just absorb and just be inspired by other things. And that in and of itself can be part of the painting process. But kind of like what you're saying about washing your brushes and like why, you know, like it could take me 20 seconds to wash these brushes. Why am I dragging this out?
Sometimes it takes me like 45 minutes to get out of the studio. I just don't understand what's happening.
Well, I think it's natural in a way though, right? Because you're so focused on this painting and you're trying to solve so many problems and you're doing so many different things, right? And then you kind of need like this transition time, I think. Mm-hmm. Aunt Gail talked about that, I think, a little bit about her transition times and how she realized that was really important. But yeah, I guess, you know, it's going back to how you felt about your art shows and that you have this period afterwards where it's just like you do all this stuff and then... And then like, wait, what? I'm done now. So in a mini way, I think like at the end of the day at the studio, it's kind of like that because you're so problem solving and fixated on all this stuff. And then you just, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's too abrupt. It's like the difference between waking up naturally on a weekend versus getting up 2 hours earlier than you're used to by a really loud alarm by your bed, your head. It's just too abrupt.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It really is true. I actually like when it's starting to get dark and you're actually like seeing the paintings in that like half light of the evening time is really, I don't know, like you can see the value structure much better. And it's kind of like putting it on the floor over in the corner and it just sort of in the dark and it's like, oh, okay. Okay, that's what's happening with it.
Yeah.
I think. And maybe just having some time where I'm not looking right at it, but I'm washing my brushes and kind of glancing over and then maybe, you know, sitting down while I'm doing, you know, and kind of, I think, it's a different way of kind of relating with it and thinking about things as I'm packing up. I think it's part of it.
Yeah, you know, it's now that you say that, it's kind of like it gives you the ability to get the to see it in your periphery instead of like being like this with it. And when I say that, I'm putting my hands up to my face.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, Zoe, you have a show up right now still, and is that correct? Can you tell them? We'll close with where your show is and how people can see your work.
Sure. There's a show with Haynes Galleries in Nashville. The first half of the show was in Thomaston, Maine, and then it just traveled to Nashville. So the opening will be on October 7th, and it'll be up for, I think, till November 19th or something. I'm not entirely sure about those dates. but I'll be out there for the opening, and then, it'll be up for, I think, a little over a month.
Okay, cool. So Nashville, Tennessee on October 7th.
7th. Yes.
So that will be Friday night, if I'm not mistaken.
It will be, yes.
Very cool.
I just shipped out the last paintings for it half an hour before we talked.
So. Oh my gosh!
Everything will be there. Except one that I'm going to take in my suitcase that I still need to varnish and photograph.
Very cool. Zoe, it was such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much, and for sharing so much of yourself.
Oh, thank you so much. It was really fun. I enjoyed talking with you.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. As always, you can go to savvypainter.com for the show notes on this episode and to see examples of Zoe's paintings. And while you are there, pick up your free ebook, The Essential Tips for Artists, Volume 1. It's a collection of quotes from artists who've been featured on The Savvy Painter. Bit by bit, I'm going back through episodes and pulling words of wisdom, techniques, and inspiration into an ebook. Now that we're over 100 episodes, I feel like I just have to commemorate this somehow. So I made you guys a little ebook. So grab your free copy today. Just go to savvypainter.com/ebook. Until the next time, this is Antrese Wood with the Savvy Painter podcast. Thank you so much for listening.